I feel all right.
Are you happy to start recording?
Yeah, happy to start recording.
All right. I'm here with my friend Jackson Stewart, my dear sweet friend, stand-up comedian, amateur chef.
I guess.
Motorcycle salesman.
I do marketing. I'm not a salesman.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay. I get no commissions.
Sydney fish market enthusiast.
Absolutely. That should be, up there. Also, amateur mycologist.
Oh, yeah. You're a mushroom boy.
Yeah, I love mushrooms.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah. I saw your post yesterday. It's like coming out of summer, so we're back into mushroom season.
They'll be popping up, baby. Yeah. I'm keen for it.
Do you forage? I think I asked you this in the car.
I don't mind foraging, but I like identifying and just...
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. More like ecological aspects
rather
than culinary.
Nice. And does that relate... I don't think I've asked you this flat out before. Does it relate to psychedelic mushrooms at all? Or is it just like a separate interest?
Like sometimes.
Sometimes,
like
yeah.
It's like a subsection, but it's absolutely not, you know, the main...
Yeah.
Cause of my interest.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, sick. That's awesome. So you just came back from Adelaide Fringe Festival.
Yes.
Where you did your first ever show down there, hour-long show.
Yep.
And I think because, like, just to give people context of what you do on stage, like you're a stand-up comedian, but I feel like you do, like, it's almost like you're not a trained clown, but there is an element of clowning in your act, and definitely in your show. Like, I saw the interpretive dance and stuff like that. Like,
I'd say so. Yeah, I don't like, I don't know. It's mainly just because I don't have any money, I guess, that I'm not a trained clown.
Yeah, sure.
Like, if I had money, I would have wasted so much of
going to Gaulier.
Yeah. But you know, I don't know. I had a bad experience at a clown workshop once.
You told me about this.
Yeah. It turns out they're pretty handsy over there.
Well, that was that whole Zoe Coombs Ma thing, like when she did Dave or whatever. It was like the funniest thing you can do as a clown, as an alternative comedian, is just take your penis out.
Yeah. Like,
and this idea of it being like alt comedy, it's like, well, it's still like pretty patriarchal.
Yeah.
So an alternative to what?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It's cool. I like clowning though. I love like, you know, Tom Walker does his clowning stuff.
Yeah, I love Kyle Legacy.
Kyle Legacy. Yeah, I love Carl's wig, you know, he wears that big wig.
I think he encapsulates the idea of clown better than anyone else.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. He's that idea of like you have the clown inside of you.
Yeah, it's just like you make it happen, you know. He's pulling it from the ether, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than just like, you know, here's some stuff I wrote.
I don't know if many people listening will know who Kyle Legacy is, but he's a comedian from Liverpool, Manchester.
Liverpool, UK.
And he's just like a hobo, a comedy hobo, right? He just travels around the world, goes to all the different festivals, just does spots.
Well, yeah, but he always has like a place to live.
He has a couch to crash on. Absolutely, but very. Yeah, he's funny, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he means to be or not. He's always entertaining. Yeah,
he's, you know, a famous clown. As far as I know, I'm concerned.
The most famous clown. Can you imagine Kyle Legacy at Gaulier?
Gaulier School. Yeah, he'd be crushing it.
He would. He would be the favorite student.
Okay, let's get off Kyle.
I didn't bring him up.
hey. I was thinking about clowning, and that's where my brain goes for clowning.
How did you find Adelaide? Because I sorry, I do know I asked you a little bit of this, like just socially, but I went in 2019. I did a split show with a friend, and like our friend Jack Wright, who has been on the podcast, he came back. He's like, "Yeah, I learned a lot." I'm like, "Did you feel? Do you feel like you learned a lot? Like, what did you learn?"
I honestly think I learned more in that week of doing Adelaide than I have in the past 2 years doing comedy in Sydney.
What do you mean?
Like just like skills wise. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just,
was it the first time you've been on stage for an hour?
Yeah. Okay. Oh no. I've done like plays and stuff.
Right. But doing one man.
Yeah. One man stand-up stuff. Yeah.
Okay. I can see. Okay. I understand what you mean then in that case. Yeah.
And then there's also these, 15 minute, fringe gigs that they had where it's just like there's like a box, And then like random passers-by, they pay $10.
Yeah.
And then they watch you do comedy for 15 minutes and then they go. And so there's like no intro. It's just you and them in a box for 15 minutes.
One person.
Just, yeah.
That is bizarre.
And it's like, it's...
You did that?
Yeah, I did it 4 times.
Fucking hell.
And it's like very scary, like the first time.
That's insane.
Just like...
To one person.
Well, no, not to one person. Sorry, it's me. Other people are coming in to watch me. Not... So it's like there'd be like 10 people or something.
Okay, sure. All right.
And
right,
it's...
Right.
Yeah. But it's just like... I learned a lot doing that because you have to be, you know, everything. You're everything in the show. You're the entire show.
Yeah, you have to bring it from the get-go. You can't just be like...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's so fucking...
And good. It's like they don't know that they're seeing comedy like 10 minutes before they're watching you do 15 minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fucking hell, yeah. Crazy. Yeah, I don't think they had anything like that when I went down in 2019.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they've been doing it a while.
Really? Yeah. Crazy.
Probably just didn't get.
Is this during the day?
No, it was like at like after 7, I think.
Right.
So it's still daylight, but yeah.
Weird.
You know.
So weird.
Yeah.
So wait, explain it to me. So like, they come in for 15 minutes. Do you start the set once they're in there, or you're already performing? Oh, they just come in for a standard.
Like once everyone is seated.
That's when you start. Yeah. So 15-minute set. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. And it's just in the mall? Like, what is...
It's in the garden of Unearthly Delight. So, it's like a big...
So, it's just like a little sampler. People can see different acts and decide who they want to spend money on.
Yeah. Well, it's like... I don't know. It's just... I don't know. It's hard to describe.
Yeah, that's like, okay. It's fine.
I'm not sure if anyone's like going in there and like doing their set and then selling many tickets.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Who's did you see any other shows? You're on pretty late. Did you
see
any
other shows? I only saw the shows of the other people I was down with. So yeah, right, Jack Wright.
best to worst. Let's rank. Jack Wright, Laura Coleman, Andrew Hastings. Who's the best? Who's the worst?
I'm not going to be doing that.
I plead the fifth.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
That's a good crew though. That's like it was. It must have been nice to have like a little support.
Yeah.
Because like you're not doing splits, so you're not invested. Like
yeah.
You're not necessarily you're invested in the sense like, oh my, I want my friends to do well, but you're not invested in the sense like I've got something riding on your fucking set. Like it's not like a split show.
Yeah, it was nice. Like last time, you know, I went to like another city to do comedy. I was just crying a lot. You know,
were there any tears this time?
No tears.
You told me Andrew Hastings cried because you moved him. So
yeah. He was so proud of me.
He was so moved by your performance.
Yeah.
Selling your soul to the devil to get better at comedy.
Hey, it was... You know.
That is kind of Andrew Hastings' origin story, I think. He's evil, but like he's got good intentions.
Yeah, I don't know. He's an enigma of a man.
He's been on the pod as well. Yeah, Andrew Hastings was on the Biohazard episode, which is one of my favorites, actually. Yeah. That's cool, man. So, do you reckon you'll go again? Do you reckon you'll go to Adelaide ever again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I've been to Adelaide twice.
For the Fringe?
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
Sorry. Like, just in general, but also only during Fringe.
Yeah.
And I've been attacked, like assaulted both times.
You told me your shin's still hurting today from getting attacked last week.
Yeah, so like, I the first morning, I went outside to get a coffee at like 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then this guy, clearly on meth, just kicked me in the shin as hard as he could.
Adelaide, baby.
And then I just sort of like backed away and then ran off, I guess.
Fucking hell.
But yeah.
I feel like you're a very tall person.
Mm.
So... You're not like, I wouldn't call you intimidating, but like as far as like on the street, I don't feel like you, do you feel like you're targeted a lot? Like that would surprise me is what I'm saying.
Because
usually big guys don't necessarily get.
I don't know how often I'm targeted because I'm often like wearing earphones.
Sure, right. So like, somebody might be yelling at you.
I don't know how many slurs I'm getting, you know, yelled at me, but it has been known to happen.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
What are your favorite slurs you've been called? Top 3 slurs. Let's go. Rank them.
I mean, it's really usually just the one.
Just the one, yeah. Yeah. Let's take a guess.
I think you can, you know.
The N-word.
No.
That's cool, man. Yeah, awesome. So you're going to work on this show. It's called Sexy Freak of Nature.
That was the name. I'm probably going to...
You're going to change it.
Change it.
So you've kind of done your trial at Adelaide. You're going to work on it over the next year and potentially take it to Melbourne 2025.
Yes, that's the plan.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Sweet. Well, I guess that's the plug. Keep a vague ear out for Jackson Stewart's Melbourne show next year.
Yeah, follow my Instagram, whatever. Jackson_Stew.
And if you're in Sydney, actually, like, make sure you go see Jackson. He's like, whenever this is kind of before we knew each other very well, but like, whenever you would come do Rat Club, like, there's just those weeks where I'm sure you get this. Like, I just get fatigued by stand up comedy. Like, if I'm doing gigs every night, by the end of that week, I'm just like, I don't want to hear another joke.
Yeah.
And you, at least at Rat Club, like, you are always like a real breath of fresh air.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. It really made me, especially in those weeks where I'm just like over it and like, I've got to go run this fucking show. Seeing you do comedy was like, oh, thank God. Like, literally. That's very nice. Yeah. And it's not, and like, obviously I think you're extremely funny, but that also has nothing to do with it. Like, whether or not it's a good show or not, like, the crowd's good. Like, maybe the crowd's shit, but like, me watching you, I'm like, oh God, this is...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is so nice.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I always like to start with a compliment.
Okay. You know?
Because it makes comedians so fucking uncomfortable.
Clearly.
Whenever you get a genuine compliment. I was doing that to Annabelle on Friday. Annabelle James, who's another young comic. I was like, oh, Annabelle, you're so good. Like, you're just so likable. Everyone loves you on stage, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, okay. And she like walked away. I'm like, all right, sorry for being nice. I like it when people are nice to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like it when people are mean to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real flaw with a lot of my relationships.
I love the idea of like being aware of your own like psychology and then like just being like, that's just the way it is. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think that's important, you know?
Yeah.
Important to know.
Yeah.
Know what's wrong and do absolutely nothing to change it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, okay. So like, before we get stuck into this, this album today, we're talking about Snapgase. We're talking about their 1997, sophomore record, progression through sophomore means second.
Yeah, I know.
It's a three syllable word for a two syllable word.
Yep.
Yeah. Their second record, Progression Through Unlearning. I think before I set this up, I think it's always pertinent to acknowledge that there's like a large age gap between you and me.
Yep.
Yeah. I always forget how old, like being in comedy, like everyone's like probably at least fucking 10 years younger than me at this point.
Yeah.
But I think our age gap is bigger. How old are you?
24.
So 14 years between us.
Yep.
14 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
So were you born? Wait, I can't do math.
No.
1997?
I was not.
98.
I'm 99.
99.
Mm.
It's nice. It's always nice when they're born, at least born before 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you wouldn't have memories of that, like on the news.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah,
I was two.
You were born after Princess Di passed away, which is another big thing in my childhood.
Yeah,
it means nothing to you.
It's nothing. Well, I mean, you know, culturally, I understand. You know.
Yeah, so it's a weird thing because, like, for me, like, I was trying to watch Friends, and then Friends got interrupted by the news bulletin about Princess Diana passing away, and I was like, "Fucking hell!"
Damn.
Whereas, like, for you, it's just like, "Oh yeah, history."
Yeah. I don't really think there was any major like interruptions
until COVID.
Yeah. But like not like during my, you know, formative
years.
Yeah,
no,
there was
totally.
Nothing where I was like, oh, this fucking shit.
Yeah, it was kind of
like.
And
then it's like, oh, this is major news. Yeah.
Yeah, like those two decades were almost like, you know, obviously we had wars and stuff, but like it was a little bit like the roaring 20s. It's like, oh, everything's cool. And then.
Yeah.
Have that for 14 years and then COVID happens, I guess.
Yeah. It's like, what is like. It's like Challenger disaster, Princess Di, 9/11.
Those are the big ones. Yeah, I see. I don't. I don't even know what year Challenger Disaster was, but I probably look at that. This is similar to how you look at Princess Di.
Yeah.
I just bring that up because, like, 1997. I didn't find Snapcase in 97. I was still listening to like Everclear and getting into like Korn and stuff like that in 1997.
Yeah, actual good stuff.
And Eminem. Eminem was a big one. Yeah, in 97. Actual good stuff. You know, yeah, the real shit. I tried to put Limp Bizkit on in the car yesterday with Bianca while we were driving, and she was like, no! Ladies and gentlemen!
It's good stuff.
It's good stuff, baby. So I just wanted to flag that for the listeners, like where the different places that we're coming to this from. What is your, like, what's your music? Like culturally, like where do you fit in music wise?
I don't know. My favorite artist probably of all time is Fiona Apple.
Cool. Yeah.
I don't know. It's like,
that's a very like Gen X millennial cusp choice as well. Like that's like you're an old soul, you know?
like to be
into Fiona Apple, yeah.
I don't know. It's like growing up, it was like a lot of Pink Floyd. And then I got really...
Is this your parents? Like, is this your parents?
Yeah, Pink Floyd from my dad, Fiona Apple from my mom. But then, yeah, when I was in high school, I played a lot of Call of Duty, and that led to me getting really into Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah, right, okay. War music.
It's just like...
Generation Kill.
I don't know. Too much.
And then Avenged Sevenfold kind of came out. They were like came out of the hardcore scene. Yeah. You know, they're like one of those like Hot Topic style metalcore bands, I guess. Yeah.
I got really into Death Grips for a while.
Death Grips are great. Yeah.
So,
but like you don't have any sort of like subcultural attachment to these bands. It's just like, oh, music I like.
It's
cool.
It's just, yeah, like different things where it's just like, oh, this is this person I really like at this particular, you know, genre. Absolutely. I don't know, like seek out music based on genre alone.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think sort of getting to the late 90s now, like this podcast goes year by year. Like there's so much splintering that's happening within the hardcore scene. And because the 90s was such a time where they were breaking out into the mainstream. Mm. Which is interesting because like people want to, this has been happening for like 25 years now, like the mainstream kind of like being culture vultures on hardcore music, hardcore and punk music. But, you know, last week, Khloe Kardashian posted a photo of herself in the Sydney hardcore band Speed merch. It's like the most, one of the most famous people in the world is wearing a local hardcore band t-shirt on her fucking Instagram that millions and millions of people follow. Like, this is no longer... It's just interesting to me that, like, people, like, maintain, oh, this is the underground, this is the underground, this is the underground. It's like, it's kind of like... I think after the 90s finished, it's kind of just became part of the world. I don't think it was, like, this special secret thing anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, there are still special secret things, but it's like, we do not know about them. Because, I'm not, you know...
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, 19-year-old art student or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. So like the genre thing is interesting because you could say that there are so many genres within hardcore itself, especially in the 90s. It felt like every band kind of had a gimmick. Like we just did an episode with Jack Wright about Earth Crisis, and you know, that was like the vegan straight edge, you know?
Yeah.
They weren't just a hardcore band, they weren't just a metalcore band, they were vegan straight edge metal core band.
Yeah.
And in the 90s that seemed to be a real thing. Like there was another band called Unbroken, and they brought in this like, you know, they loved Morrissey. Their thing was that they were this like heavy hardcore band, but they fucking loved Morrissey and the Smiths.
Yeah.
That was like their thing.
Well, what do you mean? Like they did covers or like
no,
what,
they, like, oh yeah, they oh no, they covered Joy Division. They covered Love Will Tear Us Apart. They didn't cover Morrissey, but like yeah, I remember the guitarist had like the hair.
Yeah, okay.
He loved Morrissey so much. He had the hair. I saw them live, actually. I saw them live in like 2009, I think. Yeah, they did a reunion. But so it's just like the 90s. I do think like even if they weren't consciously trying to have gimmicks, like the influence of the mainstream, the influence of like there was money to be made, meant that they really honed in on these certain points of difference, quote unquote. And then I think why Snapcase stood out is because they came out and they were just normal dudes just writing aggressive music. And there was really no gimmick with these guys.
Yeah.
They were just like, oh yeah, we're just, and they sort of say that in interviews. They're like, I don't know, we're just doing what we knew, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then like, I guess with retrospect, this record specifically, their second record, is look back. Everyone, the main word that keeps coming up is just like, it was so innovative.
Mm.
Like everyone just thinks it was so innovative in terms of the genre.
Yeah.
And I don't know, before I go into more details, I want to hear what you thought, I guess. Yeah, yeah. I'll give you, I want to give you history. I want to give you context, but like maybe just like, what was your first impression listening to it?
First impression... I don't know. I can't tell if I love or hate the drums throughout this.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of stuff about the drums. We can get into.
It's very like, I don't know. It's, I'm definitely not neutral on them. I don't know.
It when you listen to it, I feel like that drum sound, it doesn't sound deliberate, but it evidently it was, it was a deliberate choice. Yeah.
I don't know. It's very okay. Yeah, it's very loud.
very noisy.
Well, it's like I feel like you know, if the guy stopped yelling, I'd be able to understand what he's saying a bit better. I think that's
common feedback.
Yeah. A general, criticism for this kind of type of music.
How do you like interrogate that? Like coming from, I've never really listened to Avenged Sevenfold, but like you're not unfamiliar with aggressive music. You've listened to Avenged Sevenfold. You've listened to Death Grips. So how do you reconcile like, oh, I liked Avenged Sevenfold, but I don't like this.
I think I can understand what like the lyrics are.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Like
yeah,
it's
yeah. Sure,
um,
sure, sure, sure. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think like maybe it's like mental deficiency of mine or whatever. but it's like if I can't like understand, it like makes me angry.
Sure. Okay.
It's like, ah, what do you,
I think such a part.
It's like, they're trying to get a message to me.
Yeah,
and it's like, I cannot understand the message.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think it's interesting coming into these sorts of bands, like in the age of streaming, because like I know we got Genius, and I know Spotify put up the lyrics to songs and stuff, but it's very different because like such a big part of the culture. Like, you buy the CD and you look at the liner notes, you read all the lyrics. When you go to the live show, you can fucking scream your lungs out with the singer, and that was like such a part of it. So like that doesn't necessarily translate to 2024 when it's just like putting fucking Spotify radio on or whatever, and just like having it wash over you a little bit.
I don't know. It's I don't know. I like being able to understand the poetry and the lyrics, you know? I don't know. There's a lot of soul stuff in here.
Yeah.
Like reading the lyrics.
Yeah. You
know, a lot of like self-discovery.
Yeah.
He
ended up being, he works as a therapist now. I don't know if I took down his exact job, but yeah, he does work in mental health services now.
Yeah,
the lead singer. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, my like note for the opening
Darryl
song
Tversky.
Is like Caboose. It's like
can
being
pull the weight,
like being open with yourself and your desires. You can't be happy if you're pretending to be something else or someone else. You know,
which is like I think is very part of what they're talking about when they're talking about this band being innovative is like. So much of hardcore for a long time was like looking at society, you know, like society, man.
Yeah.
And these guys were like, well, what about your own fucking issue?
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with me that I'm not fitting in with society? Like, sure, society's fucked, but like also like I'm not fucking perfect. Like,
yeah.
That sort of idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think is, this idea of hardcore being like for the outcast and everything like that. It's like, okay, good. That's good. Mm. But like, can we look into that a bit more? And like, sort of this is obviously before the idea of like mental health awareness and not everything like that, but it was mental health awareness. Like he was being like, yeah, we're fucked up, but like, we don't need to be fucking miserable. Like,
yeah,
you know? Yeah. I appreciate that a little bit. Like,
It's a bit of introspection in a world where, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like people love this I found Snapcase, I think after high school, maybe late high school, like maybe 17, 18, and probably just on some sort of compilation CD. They were on a label called Victory Records for their entire career, and they released Taking Back Sunday and stuff in their heyday. But before they released all these emo bands, they were a dedicated hardcore label. And so Snapcase released every single record on that label. I was never super into this album. I got into them on their final album, which is called End Transmission, which is like way more atmospheric and like way more, it's like almost like retro futuristic. Mm. Like remember that movie Moon with Sam Rockwell?
No.
No? Well, kind of like almost like Alien, the first Alien, like that kind of like retro idea of what the future would look like.
Yeah.
That's what their sound to me was.
Okay.
And then so I found them on their final album. Then I went forward. I bought the CD of their third record. So they had four in total, which is called Designs for Automotion, which was even just more of that, like way less atmospheric than their final one. But you know, they have songs called Energy Dome and typeface modulator. I can't even remember
Energy Dome. That's what I call it when I get sucked off by a member of Devo.
They did a bunch of Devo covers, this band.
Right on.
Yeah, right on, brother.
Yeah.
But all the diehard hardcore kids in the scene, they were all about Caboose. You know, they're all about progression through unlearning, this record. And I guess I just came to them later, and it's like the recording quality on those later albums and even maybe like the songwriting was like just so much more realized that it was hard for me to move backwards. But I think this is significant. So even though it's not necessarily my favorite Snapcase record, it's like, it's the most significant one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it kind of like broke through the noise of like all this kind of like mid to late 90s gimmicky nonsense that was going on there. I was like, no, let's just write good hardcore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can give you some quotes if you like, to give you some like just some context on the band itself, because like
it's hard to find stuff like.
Well, I remember finding them. I had a magazine. It must have been Kerrang or Metal Hammer or something, and that's how I found Snapcase. That must have been the compilation I got it.
Yeah.
I got it on, because you know how they put the CDs on the front of the
magazines
back in the day. And then they had a big feature on Snapcase, and it was like, oh, they look like guys. The whole thing was like these are just normal guys, and this was in the heyday of like fucking Limp Bizkit dressing up, Slipknot, all that sort of shit. And there was like these. I remember like one of the. Like the pull quotes was like, you could take these guys home to meet your mom, sort of thing. Like they were just like normal dudes, meaning like they were straight white dudes.
Basically. Yeah. None of these freaks.
None of these fucking freaks. And that was like, okay, interesting. And they're just talking about how aggressive they were compared to what their image was. Because image, I guess that's what I'm getting at. Like image was such a fucking huge thing in the late 90s and early 2000s. I guess. But this is from Daryl Taberski, who's the lead singer. He's just talking about coming out of the hardcore scene, because they did they were able to do huge tours. They were never the headliner, but they were the main support on these really big tours. And so he just says, we owe everything to the hardcore scene, but at the same time, we don't want to be labeled. We've toured with punk bands, ska bands, metal bands, new metal bands. We've had fun and done well with all of those different categories and scenes. I think we bridge together punk and metal and hardcore all together. It's important for us to be able to go tour Europe with NOFX and have a good time. And also be able to tour with a band like Deftones and have a good time. I don't think there's a lot of bands that can do that. We don't want to fit in. We just want to be Snapcase. Which is interesting. I guess like why I pulled that quote out is just because like I think that really kind of encapsulates their sound, because like when I listen to them, I'm like, oh, this is very punk, but it's also like kind of noisy, kind of metal. Like it's not any one thing, but it is like really cohesive and I think really realized to me. I don't know if you found that like coming from the outside.
I don't know, I just thought it's like this is, I listened like four times.
It
just it's just not for me.
Yeah, you know, no, like absolutely,
it's,
absolutely,
it's, and it's hard for me to discern all the little.
Is it more of a like a no care kind of thing, like
no care,
like you don't care about it, or
I don't know. It's just like it annoys me.
Yeah, okay.
It's
just because you can't sort of understand what he's getting at.
Well, it's like I can understand what he's getting at if I like read the lyrics.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But not being able to hear that is frustrating to me.
That muddles the message.
Yeah,
a little bit. Is message important to you? Like when you sort of talking about Fiona Apple and Pink Floyd and stuff. Like, do you take a lot emotionally from those bands?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay,
like cool. Also, like I listen to a lot of Elliot Smith.
Yeah, sure.
Car Seat okay. Headrest.
Yeah. Okay.
Whereas, like, a lot of it's just. Yeah.
Still emotional. Pretty introspective stuff. Car Seat Headrest and Elliot Smith.
Yeah. But yeah, like a softer voice.
You know? Sure. Obviously. Yeah. It's hard to articulate because, like, when I listen to Snapcase, I'm just like, oh, this is just Snapcase. And they're obviously a hardcore band, but, like, the riffs are very, like, Helmet, like, post grunge, like, Deftones, like, they, what he said about being a bridge, I take that like quite literally because it's like there's no other real way to explain it other than like if you have like a encyclopedia of like all the bands that sort of came before them and now the bands that came after them, it's like it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
And it sounds pretty abstract, but like I do think it's true. Like it's hard to justify to someone like coming from the outside and listening in.
So do you think it's like like great man theory, where it's like the idea that history is defined by like a few great men, as opposed to just like these are just changes that are happening already.
Are you suggesting that I'm positioning Snapcase as one of the great men, or
it's like it's like a major impact on like that particular.
I would actually say that Snapcase are just one of the small things that happen because they never gained like the mainstream success that certain other hardcore bands did.
Yeah,
they were still kind of like an underdog band.
Yeah,
and the people who know, and the people are like, oh, this band is so fucking good, I love this band, but like they're not necessarily. If you ask like 10 different people from the hardcore scene what one of the most important 90s bands was, you'd probably get a different answer from everyone.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to hone in on this thing that like maybe doesn't get in the spotlight that much.
Yeah.
Like Snapcase. Yeah. I would actually say they are one of the small things that happened, and I'd probably agree that is what history is rather than like great men.
I mean that's what I think. I think the great men theory is a bit, stupid. It's cultural changes that are happening anyway.
Especially now with like the splintering and like the factionism of like social media and everything else. Like it's hard to justify the great men.
Yeah, it's insane. How
great men are still a part of great men, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Still a part of history and like obviously have a place in history.
Yeah. If not them, someone else, you know, I think it's just a placeholder sort of.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very Marvel Cinematic Universe to like ascribe to that theory, I think. You know, like the real world has these heroes and it's like, that's not really how it.
Well, yeah. And villains. Like, I don't know.
I couldn't tell you who the Serbian, like the Serbian, I couldn't tell you the names of the Serbian anarchists who murdered Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah.
But that.
Was that was that Gavrilo someone or something?
I don't know. But I guess what I'm saying there is like, I don't know their names, but I know it happened and I know it caused a huge event. But like, obviously, if I don't know their names, like, can we call them like quote unquote great men?
Mm.
But they did something. They did something very remarkable at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do we get on this?
Great man theory. Okay, yeah. So no, I don't think Snapcase are a great man.
I just think
they're a very good band, and I think they were doing something unique in the context of what was happening around them. I like this because like this to me speaks a little bit to comedy, and I haven't heard this from any other band really. So he's saying, oh, this is from an article in Vice. Every song had to be road tested and guaranteed to make the audience go off.
I like that.
albums are, of course, important in music, but when you're a hardcore band, the live show is everything. We'd try out songs, and if the audience didn't respond after a couple of tries, we'd give up on them. That's joke writing, baby.
Man, that, like...
That's joke writing.
I respect that so much.
Yeah, I like it, right? That's... Like before we put this on record, we're going to make sure it works in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like... I don't know. It's just so sick to have, like... To be principled like that in that particular way.
Yeah, they seem like very, like... I mean, I know this is like a catch... Fucking, a catch-all phrase, but like, for lack of a better word, they seem very autistic.
Mm.
Even the music itself, it's like I said, it's like almost like robotic, yeah. Like in a little way, like deliberately robotic. And I'm like, yeah, maybe that's, it just scratches something in the back of my brain.
Yeah.
Like hearing that. Yeah. So this album, I think we sort of touched on this, but like again, just, you know, I've got my notes here. I've got my references. It said that it carves a median between complex and accessible without indulging too much in one or the other.
Mm.
How do you feel about, like, do you think it's... I don't think it's that accessible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it's particularly complex?
I don't know.
Maybe for 97.
Maybe for 90s. Well, it's hard for me to, like, what is complex, you know? Yeah. It's like, yeah, as times change and, you know, things develop, it's, you know, it's like Seinfeld feels pedestrian just because, like, you know, it was so influential on so many other, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You've seen other people take the next step.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 totally, yeah. Well, yeah, I think you brought this up the other day when we were sort of discussing it, like there's the song Guilty by Ignorance.
Yeah.
And I think you said it's like, oh yeah, no, I get it. It's no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Yeah.
It's like in 2024, that's almost like a meme.
Yeah.
Like that phrase is a meme. But like in 97, for a hardcore or punk band to be like saying that in a song of all things is like pretty... It's like, oh, these guys are smart. Like these guys went to university kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's true, I guess.
It's true, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just like I think you're right. Like that's not a particularly complex thing to express.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah, and also like this is 2 years before I was born.
Yeah. You know? Crazy. Crazy. So like the thing that it makes this record interesting is basically they lost their main songwriter right before they went in to record this. So they had an album, Looking Glass Self. They had an EP that was called Steps that was really, really popular. And they had kind of defined their style. Their audiences knew what Snapcase was and the types of songs they wrote. And then all of a sudden their guitarist, Scott Dressler, left the band. And so... Their second guitarist, Frank Vicario, he took over as the band's primary songwriter, which it was just like a big change, like right when they were sort of like breaking out a little bit. And so basically they, on this record, well, starting with Caboose, starting with that first song, they were basically trying to replicate the sound that Scott Dressler had established.
Yeah.
So Frank Vicario was trying to write a song like this other guy, basically, to continue the sound. Because they had, I guess, like, they recognized that they had something quite unique.
Yeah.
So they wrote Caboose. And then there's a story of, like, Dressler coming to a show and seeing them play that and coming up to them afterwards and being like, that's the best Snapcase song. Like, after he had already left the band, he's like, yeah, that's the best Snapcase song. Yeah. And people, like friends, like people I was in bands with and stuff, they would still say Caboose is the best Snapcase song.
Yeah.
Which I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah.
There's some songs on End Transmission that like beat out Caboose, but yeah.
I don't think it was like the one that I liked the most on this album.
Yeah. I like Zombie's Prescription.
Yeah.
That's got a bit more groove to it. And it's like...
I also like Breaking and Reaching.
Oh, that's the slower one. Yeah.
It's like that's the second last one, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
The long, it's like 4 minutes or something.
Quite possibly, yeah.
I think it's a bit longer, yeah. But yeah, like I think what they always like. Do you play guitar? Are you a musician at all?
No, I've got my fingers are like, I got weird fingers. It was like my my ligaments are they're like extended ligaments in my
right. Is it hyperextension or something like hyper?
I don't know the way that I've got extended ligaments in my phalanges. So it's like that's
oh no,
all I know.
Oh no,
and it just it makes.
So you'd be the vocalist. You wouldn't be the.
Yeah,
you'd be writing lyrics.
Oh, actually, I did do drum lessons for a few years.
Oh, yeah,
I forgot about that.
Yeah. You could be a good drummer.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something? Like, this is a weird thing in my brain. This is totally unrelated.
Mm.
Whenever I have a weird thing in my brain that whenever I see someone wearing like one of those like Def Leppard shirts that you can just get from Target or Kmart or whatever, something happens in my brain where just for a split second, I'm like, oh, that person has one arm. Because the drummer of Def Leppard had one arm.
Yeah. That's...
It's just like an intrusive thought. Like, I'm looking at them. I can see they have two arms. But in my head, I'm like, Def Leppard, one arm. That person has one arm.
That's an interesting insight into your brain.
Only like it's not... I mean, it is illogical, but it's not like a psychosis. It's
I can see
they have two arms. It's just like... Something in my head is telling me like that they should only have one arm or something. Literally just because I'm seeing the words Def Leppard.
This is such like I was not expecting to hear that at all. That's
it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Because like, I think like when I was a kid, I learned that the drummer from Def... Oh, it was that Bloodhound Gang song.
Yeah.
That lyric about the drummer from Def Leppard having one arm. I'm like, Def Leppard... Drummer, one arm.
Mm.
Def Leppard, one arm. Does that have that association in my brain?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, once that association...
That's my there, only it's... intrusive thought.
It's your only intrusive thought.
That's my only intrusive thought.
You never wanted to, like, you know...
Cut my own hands off?
Break the mug in the school counselor's office and, like, slash his face?
No, never.
No, you never...
Is that something that you felt?
Ah, you know, he was a very annoying guy.
sorry, that's such a weird tangent to take it on. You know when you see a guy like doing that in stand-up? Hey, you all know these Def Leppard shirts you see around?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know when you see someone wearing one of those and you just go, oh, that guy's got one arm?
Mm. Do you reckon anyone else makes that connection?
I would love to know. I would love to know. If you guys are listening to this, please DM me on Instagram and let me know if anyone else relates to that. I think I'm the only person in the fucking world who would ever make that association. Honestly. I'm not deluded about it. I'm like, this is a bizarre thing to think. Just because you see a word.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to get back to the sound of Snapchat.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
really hard to pivot back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like I think something that really defined them is not just like the stop start. Kind of like angular riffs, because Helmet had already sort of done that. And Helmet, one of the guitarist in Helmet had been in hardcore bands in the past, etc. I think combining that with like the pure speed, like the speed of the songs, like the tempo of the songs, but also like it's more like the lead guitars over it, like playing the harmonics, which is why I asked if you play guitar, like the harmonics are where you don't press down on the fret, you put your finger sort of on the string, on the actual metal part of the fret.
Yeah.
And so it makes that very like metallic kind of high pitched electronic sound. I think that was such a defining thing on that. I think that's why I get that kind of like futuristic robotic association with this band. And I think that's also partly from the artwork for End Transmission. Mm. Like they're fun. Cause I came backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just had that vibe. I don't know, because like people talking about the sound, but then people are also talking about the feel, like how they feel, and that's what I mean. Like the sound is like okay, you can see the metal influence, like there's some songs where it's like oh it's discordant and it's like noisy and it's very heavy, very aggressive, but then like the actual tone of the guitar is very punk rock, and then he's screaming, like it's just like all this stuff going on that you can say okay, it sounds like this. But I think all those elements come together and it's more about how it feels when you listen to it.
Mm.
At least for me. And then like reading how other people sort of talk about it kind of confirmed that for me. Because like in this Vice article, they say it felt decidedly unlike anything else in the scene in the mid-90s, which was largely marked by the deep crushing tones of heavy hitters like Madball and Earth Crisis. And this is, I think this is what I like about this quote. It had a feisty personality to it. I think that's, I'm like, yeah, they're feisty.
Yeah.
I always thought they were feisty.
Yeah.
Because they feel like little, like, very, like, agile dudes. Like, they feel like little, like, gremlins almost.
Yeah. Short man syndrome.
Short man syndrome. It's two tall boys in the room. You're like, yeah, it must be hard.
Yeah.
Sucks
to suck, I guess.
Sucks to suck. I've got a couple of quotes from other musicians, like other
yep.
bands. So Chad Istvan from the band Boy Sets Fire. I literally remember where I was the first time I heard Progression Through Unlearning. From the first drum hits, I was blown away by how heavy, energetic, and original they sounded. This was the new benchmark, and everyone was left trying to catch up. The term hardcore in the mid to late 90s was a term that, in my opinion, was being stretched and punctured through with bands experimenting in other influences. Snapcase were right in the thick of it, and it's crazy evident. I think, like, I kind of take that from a different angle, that last part, because, like, he's talking about it being, like, stretched and punctured. The idea of hardcore wasn't just, like, one thing anymore, which is great and which is true, and that's, like, really the legacy of the 90s in hardcore.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, the genre was becoming more than it ever... It's yeah. becoming more than punk, more than just an offshoot of punk rock. It's becoming very much its own thing.
Well, with anything, you grow or you stagnate.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, there's a lot of kind of... With any sort of subculture, there's these purists where you're like, oh, that's not real hardcore.
Mm.
But it's like... I mean, you can have both. You can have everything. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Oftentimes I find, like, these are people who... are like, oh yeah, I'm actually like, I'm into hardcore, but I'm also into like indie music, and they only listen to The National. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like, you don't have like not that there's anything wrong with The National, but like it's just like, it's good to have reference points, because like the more you consume, the more you define your own taste.
Mm.
And that's so important. You can't just like listen absolutely. To one thing.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you also got
to... Taste is so important to fucking cultivate.
I think it's very important to like actively engage with like culture and media that you don't like.
I agree.
So that you can better discern what you actually do like.
Yeah, I went and saw the Barbie movie. I saw what all these broads were talking about.
Yep.
Best part of the Barbie movie? Ryan Gosling's performing, brother.
Damn. I thought it was the end when it ended.
When it ended.
Nah, it was
fine.
We're
doing bits. It's fine. So long. Gonna get in trouble for that one.
it was a good long commercial, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I actually do like that take. It's like especially with the Oscars and stuff. It's like, oh, Margot Robbie, Greta Gerwig. It's like, it was a long commercial. Greta Gerwig has amazing movies, and they aren't Barbie. Go watch Frances Ha if you want like a really compelling like feminist story.
Mm.
You know? Yeah. Anyway, rap rain today. And last episode as well. Luke Collar from Sick of It All. We did an episode on Sick of It All recently. So I like this because the next episode we're going to do is going to be on Swedish band Refused. But Snapcase came before Refused, and Luke Collar from Sick of It All, he really drives this point home. He's like, people point at Refused's seminal album, The Shape of Punk to Come. I don't know if you're familiar with that record, Shape of Punk to Come.
No, dude.
Do you know the song New Noise?
No.
You've never heard it? It's been used in so many fucking movies. It was used in Varsity Blues, I think.
I haven't seen that movie.
You watched The Bear?
I've seen half of the first season.
So you know the song that comes
no.
in?
Like,
I'm going to do it until there's some recognition.
I don't know. Maybe if I heard the actual song, I'd be like, oh, I've heard this.
It was a big music video. It was on Rage. It was on MTV. They kind of, again, like it was another turning point for like hardcore music. But we'll talk about it in the next episode. But I think he gives you the context clues here. People point to The Shape of Punk to Come by Refused as the new innovation in hardcore. And they seem to forget Refused always followed what Snapcase did first. And I 100% agree with that. Like...
Mm.
like, not to be like America centric, but like in this case, I really do agree that Snapcase like did what Refused ended up running with. Mm. Snapcase did it first. Came out a year before Shape of Punk to Come did. Snapcase's influence is far and wide, from new generation of hardcore bands to big bands like Deftones,
mm.
which I think is true, especially from the drum sound that you brought up,
mm.
even unprompted. You know,
well, I mean, it's the first thing.
Yeah, like, yeah. The first, the first thing that you hear on yeah. the record is that fucking pop of the snare, like that. Mm. What a way to open an album too. But like, yeah, I think Deftones took that snare sound to heart because I think a big part of around the... are you familiar with Deftones?
A little, not too much.
They had an album, I think it must have been 98, 99 called Round the Fur.
Mm.
Yeah, and it had that really high-pitched snare as well. And the drummer, Abe Cunningham in Deftones is such a... he's like a really renowned drummer.
Mm.
So like to take that sound... to trace it back to Snapcase, I think is like fairly significant.
It's yeah.
like people kind of lord over Abe Cunningham as a drummer in metal music. Yeah. So yeah, I got quotes from the drummer of Refused here talking about this sound. I don't know what I want to talk about because we're running out of time. The drum sound was unique.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. starting with that fill is interesting. I was thinking about this before, not to keep throwing like random band names at you, but like at least for the listeners, one of my favorite hardcore bands is a band called Converge, mm. who are like they're a metalcore band. They're just super intense, super mathy. Really like at least for a while there, they were kind of like at the spearhead of like extreme extremity, at least in hardcore. And they had a big song called Eagles Become Vultures, which starts with this huge drum fill.
Mm.
It's like, I think it's like maybe, it's like four bars. Like Caboose starts with one bar.
Yeah.
But it just feels like they're like, let's do that, but like more, you know? Because like everything Converge did was like more. So yeah. like, but it does feel like the influence is there, like just to start a, like it's just so aggressive just to start a song with like, a feel like that, like
yeah,
I love it. Yeah. I know. I really the energy is so like palpable to me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know. Like,
that's for you guys listening. That's yeah. Jack Jackson could care less.
It's like yeah, I guess so.
I do love drums. I love drums, yeah. especially in like heavy music. Like I, yeah. I really like. Yeah, I just think there's. I kind of wish I should have been a drummer rather than a guitarist. Mm. I think sometimes because I have. Especially like in the later days of like playing in bands, I would have a lot of opinions on what the drums should yeah. be doing. I think that annoyed our drummer.
Yeah, that would.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I don't know. Maybe like it was collaborative, you know, like we're yeah, yeah, collaborative. Yeah. Like, yeah, but
also
I think I was pretty diplomatic most of the time. Who knows? It was fucking 10 years ago. So I just want to talk about how they produced it because like, mm. I keep coming back to this idea of like them sounding so futuristic, them sounding so like, I the term I use is robotic, but I feel like that could get misconstrued. I just mean like they were just so tight that it almost felt artificial.
Yeah.
But it was like, you could also still tell it was like human beings almost trying to replicate an artificial sound, which I quite like more so than the reverse that we're getting now, like the artificial intelligence trying absolutely. To replicate human stuff. So I'll just give you the story. Basically, they booked 2 weeks at a studio called Tracks East in New Jersey with a producer named Steve Evetts because they admired his work on the punk band Lifetime's album Hello Bastards.
No idea.
And the hardcore band Dead Guy's album Fixation on a Coworker.
No.
Those two albums couldn't be more different. Lifetime were kind of like a hardcore version of pop punk.
Yep.
Very fast, very melodic, but still like more underground, less mainstream appeal. And Dead Guy were just like pure noise, pure aggression. Like that. Like I will have to do an episode on Dead Guy eventually because they like really set a blueprint for like dark, fucking psychotic hardcore music. Like it was really, really sort of like scary almost. And they were two incredibly fast-paced records. From Evetts, he says, my whole thing with production is the sound comes from the player. technology helps, but it's all on the push. It's all on the push on the instrument from the individual playing it. That sometimes means me being a drill sergeant on the tightness of things. So, and then from, I think this is from Tversky, like the singer, he's talking about Steve Evans. He's like, every song, he was like, I need you to push it even harder, harder than that, harder. He's a real perfectionist. Everything had to be crisp and tight. All the stops had to be really sharp. And as a result, Tversky's vocals have one setting on the album, just relentless, and it never lowers in intensity. But I think you would apply that to all of the instruments as well. Like, it feels like it is just like... Like, to me, like, maybe a good, like, counterpart, like, if you're looking at a different genre, is, like, think about Loveless, like, by My Bloody Valentine, how it was recorded in mono. And it's not to say that they didn't have dynamics in their songwriting, but everything is just, like, hitting you in the face the whole time. And I feel similarly about this, but not... Again, like you said, it's not about the technology. It's not about the way it was recorded, like, mono or stereo or anything like that. It is, like, from him pushing these guys just to play... Not necessarily to the full extent of their ability, but to the full potential of what the song is.
Well, it's like having a vision and then like knowing what you want to get then, you know.
Well, it's almost like this guy, the producer, Steve Evans, he knew what their vision was before they did almost, which is like, I guess that's the most value you could bring as a producer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. I don't know, like the reason I like these stories because it like confirms or it gives articulation to the way this band made me feel. Like it without knowing these facts, like I could assume, but then like hearing that story, I'm like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And there's a direct line from him saying that to how it feels when I listen to these songs, which is like, I don't know. It's kind of affirming. I like that I got, it kind of confirms that I got the right thing out of this band. And what they meant to me is in line with what their vision was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's... I feel like it's... Have you ever misunderstood something? And then like art or whatever?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then you like to read something and it's like, oh, okay.
Well, I think more so like in my early 20s, like I guess like... I mean, I think you're very... I don't want to compare us. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, when I was your age sort of thing.
Yeah.
But like, I think you have a really good critical mind, the way you talk about things. So I'm not putting this on you. But like when I was your age, like, like just that, you know, you see the memes now, like the Joker memes or the Drive memes.
Yeah, and stuff.
Like Joker and Drive are good movies, but... Like, they are easily misunderstood. And I'm sure I had that with my own... I think I had it more like, almost like the reverse, like the twee shit. Like, I was too twee. Like, I was really into Wes Anderson, but I think I was into him for the wrong reasons. And then coming back around as like a fully formed adult, I'm like, oh no, Wes Anderson does rule, but not for the reasons I thought. Not for me being like a little emo kid. He's just a great filmmaker and a great storyteller.
It's like those like horseshoe intellect memes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What were you? Because like when I was 24, I was playing in bands and I was like such a like that subculture. It really formed like who I was. Would you say you're getting that from stand up comedy?
I mean, it's I'd say it's like. Yeah, most of my identity.
Because it is a subculture, but it also isn't because, like, you can't get too specific with audiences.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it, like, you can if you're big enough and, like, good enough. Like, it's.
Hey, you're going to be the next Kevin Hart, remember?
Yeah, someone did tell me that.
Yeah. Well, one person in an audience of five told you were going to be the next Kevin Hart.
Nah,
big ups. That guy was really nice. I met that guy.
Yeah. He rules. I love him. I don't know. It's all like almost all of my friends are comedians.
Yeah.
It's just.
R.I.P.
I don't know. It's just my life, I guess.
Yeah, totally. There are a lot of similarities, but I think there's also a lot of significant differences.
Yeah. I think one thing I do like about comedy is that, I don't know, it feels like anyone can do it and anyone can come at any point with all their life experiences and like start doing comedy. And so like you get to interact with a lot of different types of people.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think that's important with a subculture like hardcore. Because it's unavoidable you're going to be interacting with a lot of different types of people. But the problem with hardcore is that like there's kind of like unspoken... People do want you to be the same, even though it's like ostensibly a subculture for outcasts, quote unquote. You need to be a certain type of outcast. This is what this could just be a Brisbane thing, honestly.
Well, no, it's like it's, you know, it's like built in human nature. It's like tribalism, you know?
Yeah. So
it's like there's you, there's like us, and then the other.
I think I still learned something from that. Like, even though people want to box you in a little bit within a subculture, like it's that idea of trying to reconcile your rich inner life and like what makes you an individual with this idea of community.
Because
sometimes community pisses me the fuck off. Like, I don't want to deal with the people in my community, but it's absolutely. Like you have to, and it makes the world better if you can like lock in with your community and like make it work. Despite your differences.
Yes. You know, communication is important.
Yeah, communication is important. Yeah. I feel like I talked a lot. I want to invite you to jump in with anything that you wanted to say.
Okay.
Like, it is your review as well.
I guess just one question.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, why do you do this to people?
I've explained on the podcast before. Listen. So, basically, I think it's like... It's exactly that, exactly what we just said. Like, this was such a big part of my life. And it was like, it's such a microcosm. And I think, I think people struggle to see outside of that and see how alienating it can be for someone like yourself.
Yeah, that's very good.
So I'm just trying to illuminate that not only to you, but also to listeners who may have also grown up in these kinds of scenes where it's like, oh, this is everything to us, but it's also like nothing.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is like me approaching 40 now and like having like, you got to have an adult life, but it doesn't mean you have to let go of all these things. Like, I don't have to let go of what Snapcase meant to me as a kid. Like I don't like, it can still mean something to me and it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be immature or anything. Like, it's like what I said about Wes Anderson. Like, I can come back to Wes Anderson and be like, oh no, I misunderstood that. I guess like it's just like multiple contexts.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly.
Like accepting those multiple contexts on art that has kind of defined you. Like,
I mean, yeah, I really appreciate that. I don't know, I enjoyed this and learning about it and understanding in context what it was.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sometimes I do worry, like, I think, well, this is part of the challenge because, like, I'm like, oh, is this fucking boring as hell? I don't think it's boring to the audience. Like, I get messages and people enjoy this podcast. I know that. I'm not self-conscious about that. But, yeah, like, what you just said is, like, why are you doing this to me? I don't necessarily feel good about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's great for the, like, people love it. People love hearing, like, what you have to say or what Jack Wright has to say and, like, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, yeah. But no, I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We did all the plugs.
Yeah.
Look out for 2025, people.
That's it. It's going to be my year.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming, Jackson. Really appreciate it.
All good. Thank you for having me.
This is fun.